Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX 405. Happy Friday to you. Wind is whipping out there. Look at that. The legend Tony Scott is with us to do some half wits. First, though, I want to talk to you about voiceover.
Okay.
I've done like five, and it was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure when you're doing it professionally the way you do, it's more of a job, less fun. But when you walk in and you say a line and someone gives you $1,000, you're like, yeah. I could get used to this.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And it's still fun. You know, it's just, I mean, I'm passionate about it. I turned a space in my townhouse into a recording booth and, you know, and got all that. Recently spent I got a deal. A friend of mine sold me at this $1,000 microphone. He sold it to me for like $650.
Nice.
So I got that, and I do it. But I enjoy it a lot. A lot of fun. So I'm doing stuff either at night or in the morning, sometimes both.
So do most people who hire you, do they know you're Tony Scott, or they don't care you're Tony Scott?
No, they don't. Most of the work I do is not in St. Louis. So it's in other cities, sometimes other countries.
Wow.
You know, so I did a commercial in English for something in Sweden, and I've done some political ads in Riverside and stuff like that. So it's really all over the place. And then sometimes I just do voice work for a presentation, like a big corporation has a conference and they want to introduce, you know, Dave Glover. So I got to say, you know, in the way they want it, they tell you what direction they want. And sometimes they say they want it really deep. So then I got to say, well, I don't know how deep I can go, but I'll try. So, you know, so I do that and you know, but it's a lot of fun. I like it a lot.
What is the most challenging part of it?
Trying to interpret when they say they want something, and usually you give them what they want, and then sometimes it's frustrating because they'll like book someone else to do it, and the person that did it wasn't in any style that they told you to do it in.
Right.
So they changed their mind.
Right.
So it's that kind of stuff.
So but, like, they're figuring out what they want on the ground at your expense sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm being like pimped. So, it's like, but you know, it's the way it goes, you know. It's like I always tell people in radio, right? This is the business we have chosen. Like he said in The Godfather,
I'm involved,
right? And with that comes that, you know, the end can come at any time.
The first one I did was a Schnapps commercial, and I was a demented dentist. And I had to say, like, Sally, has the Novocaine taken effect? And I did it, and they're like, can you do it more like Mr. Burns? I'm like, hey. As soon as I did it, he's like, done, good.
That's voice acting, right?
Yeah.
That's great. That's a gift, right? I haven't conquered that yet. Usually mine are straight, and, you know, I narrate a channel called Nutty History on YouTube that I've been doing for about 3 years, and it's really just videos about history. And they send me scripts, and I send them back, and they send me money, and, you know, it supplements the income. And
if you could do it all again, you go back 25, 30 years, and you could do just voice, and you could be one of the guys.
Yeah.
You think you would just do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially, you know, knowing what I know now about how radio changed with consolidation.
Fickle.
You know, and how it is, you know, because when I got into radio, you could only own 12 radio stations. That was it, right? And 1 a.m. and 1 f.m. in a market if you wanted to, but 12 was the max. You know, so when you started, had consolidation happened already?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I think it was happening at that point. I got in 2000. I think it was right at that point.
When I came here in St. Louis, it was Magic 108. That was it. That's all they had. Noble Broadcasting. And then it got consolidation started happening. And then we bought up two stations here. And then we bought three more stations here. And then next thing you know, they had like 1,600 radio stations. And they told us that they can't have 1,600 different morning shows and 1,600 different midday and afternoon shows because the benefits will kill them.
Yeah.
Right. So they were going to start paying people to do what they call voice tracking in other cities. And they would pay them really a fraction of what they would pay someone. If someone's getting $40,000 to do middays and you decide you want to save some money, then you'll pay somebody $8,000 to do that shift who's already working for the company.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like how it works.
Yeah.
So now that beast is there. So had I known back then what I know now? Yeah, absolutely. And if I had done that, I probably could have retired twice.
Long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, because back in the day, like when you started out, those voice guys were like 10 grand a session.
Yeah, yeah.
The Don LaFontaine's.
Don LaFontaine was interesting because this is when you had to go in to a studio, right? This was nothing at home yet. And he hired, because parking in L.A. is ridiculous downtown where the studios are, right? And so he hired a limo driver, and a limo driver would drop him off and do whatever they do until he got done. And then he called them and say, I'm ready. And they come pick him up, take him back home because he didn't want to bother with the parking.
And as I understand it, I watched a special on this. I'm sure you've seen it. He and two of his OG buddies would get like go to the Brown Derby every day. Yeah. And so for you two, for the millennials, he'd get paid 10 grand per project. But sometimes his project was like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so he could do two or three projects in an hour.
Oh, yeah.
This cat was knocking down 20, yeah. 30 grand an hour.
An hour. Yeah. He was just, and it was, you know, those movie trailers he did, that In a World thing that he did, that was, you know, it was pioneering because that became the standard. So much so that, you know, it actually became a cliche. And
yeah.
That was, you know, now he passed away some years ago, but there are still people. And as you know, radio and voice work is so different, right? Like I'm getting coaching from a guy named Ryder, and I'm taking a class tomorrow with a lady named Ann Ganguza about narration, and I'm taking a promo class with Joe Cipriano, who's big-time voice guy.
You bet.
And doing that, trying to invest in that because, you know, this isn't none of it's guaranteed anymore. Like
right.
You know, I remember when I worked at Magic, they told me when they switched to an urban AC, urban adult format, they told me that I could retire from there, right?
Right.
And I was like, yeah, right.
Yeah. And then, they may have meant it. They may have actually thought that.
But it changed. Everything, the landscape changed, and you know, they had some financial rough waters when they were Clear Channel towards the end, they came. I remember when they came for me, you know, when I asked what happened, and my OM told me, salary grab, man.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? Not to get all philosophic here, but it seems humans have a way of just screwing stuff up. Mm-hmm. There was a time in radio where they had it right. Mm-hmm. Now, when the golden era was, I'm not sure. It could have been back in the 60s with KMOX. It could have been in the 2000s when, you know, I'd started out.
Yeah.
But they screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
Really bad.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton
is the one who deregulated radio, right?
Didn't know that.
They said that it would increase competition. How's that going to... Everybody bought their competition. So how did that increase competition, right? And people in radio at the time, we were like, that's not going to increase competition. What, are you crazy? And sure enough, you know, they started, you know, and even, you know, if you bought your competition in a certain market and they're in another building, you're going to move them in your building. Well, you no longer need another receptionist. You only need one.
Yeah.
Right. And you no longer need two national sales managers. You only need one. Right. And in some cases, you only needed one program director to run a couple of stations. Right. Like when I came to Magic in 89 and Chuck Atkins was the program director, that was the only station he programmed. And he would go out when we go out in the community and van hits and put bumper stickers on cars. And he was with us. Right. But then they started adding more stations. And they started giving him that responsibility, so he couldn't go out with us anymore, right? And it's crazy, and it's changed so much. It's still a lot of fun. I still love it. I have a ball here working for Odyssey, and you know, everything's cool, and know people like you guys in here, and we laugh in the hallways and lie to each other, and you know, it's all good. So
I have a couple awards that are special to me, and they sit by the window, and they've gotten dusty over the time I've been here. So today I was literally washing them off in the sink in the bathroom, and I was looking into one of them. It was from 2006. I was up for Personality of the Year for Emmys, and they had what they call the Emmy Awards. That's not a million years ago.
Right.
But in 2006, they picked me up from a limo at my house. Took me to the airport,
wow.
Flew me to Boca Raton.
Wow.
And they had I bet there are 1,000 people there. And it was like the Oscars. And it was 3 days at a resort. Put me back in the limo, brought me back home. We can't get a cheese sandwich now.
Those were, you know. And you know, I had a program director tell me here, once I was gone from Magic and I filled in at another station, he asked me something. He goes, you're damaged. He goes, they damaged you over there. And it's like, well, I don't know about all that. I said, but, you know, clearly they didn't, you know, I wasn't treated like I thought I should have been treated. And I mean, when I had my 20th anniversary there, they gave me a Def Jam Def Jam record label jacket that had been sitting behind a door for like 3 years. And it was two sizes too small. So I gave it to my daughter and kept it moving and stuff. But, you know, it's just those kinds of things. And, you know, I miss when radio wasn't deregulated and you had competition and you used to do like crazy things to each other's stations, like we'd sneak into one station and we'd take some duct tape and we would duct tape the control room door around the edge so they couldn't get out, and we would do that or disconnect someone's battery in the station fan while they were inside. It was just playful stuff that we did, and it seemed serious at the time, but now all these years later, you can't do it because it's your sister station now.
Yeah. I remember when I first started in 2000, So I started doing Steve in D.C. as an advertiser. That's how I got into this. I was advertising my law firm, my mediation company, and I just got bit by the bug, right? Because I was only faking being a lawyer anyway. And but I remember coming in one of my first days that I was on the air, and I would get here early because I had nothing else to do. And I walked in, and there was a guy walking out with a chimpanzee, and the chimpanzee was wearing a diaper. And I'm like, I am in the right place.
You're in the right place? Yeah. See, I remember, when Steve in D.C. had that N-word controversy?
You sure do.
You know, I forgot where I was, but I was in an elevator, and they were on the elevator. Elevator opens up, and I get on the elevator, and it was really tense in there, right? And this was before I was on medication for depression, and I was always angry and stuff.
Ready for a fight.
I was looking for one. I was waiting for them to say anything, right? But looking back on it now, I was being stupid and silly, but I just remember being in that elevator, and there was so much tension in that little box. It was like, wow, this is crazy, you know? But they were turning red and everything. I was like,
I bet.
You know, but it's like, hey, I didn't say it, you did.
Right. don't get mad at me.
Don't get mad at me. So, you know, but those were some interesting and fun times.
When did you start being so open about your mental health struggles?
When I was diagnosed with depression, I remember the guy who brought me to town, Chuck Atkins, he called me in his office one time. He goes, I want to talk to you, but not as your boss, as your friend. He says, you have like a lot of talent. He goes, but there's something wrong with you. And I was like, hell, you mean something wrong with me? What are you talking about, right? And he said, wait a minute, let me just say what I got to say. He said, the account executives are scared of you. Nobody wants to work with you. He says, and I just think that there's something going on with you, right? And I was like, I don't know what he's talking about. So he says, I'm going to give you this phone number for our EAP program. He goes, you call it. I'm going to give you the number, and then we're out of it as a company. You call it, not call it, it's up to you. We'll never know, right? So I called it and made an appointment, and they said, if the therapist you're going to see can help you in three sessions, then you'll be good. If not, they'll refer you to a psychiatrist. And so I went to the first session, and the therapist were talking for about an hour. He goes, well, our time is up. I said, so what do you think, man? He goes, oh, yeah, you need help. he said, I diagnosed Seth. You were here 15 minutes, and I knew you needed help, right? So he referred me to a doctor that's over there by the Galleria in those two real tall buildings.
Sure.
Yeah, some psychiatrist in there. And we talked, and this guy was $95 for half an hour. He didn't take insurance, right?
So you better get you better quick.
Yeah. So, but you know what? I was on, he put me on Prozac. And those pills stayed in my pocket for a while. And I was in the mud. I couldn't get out. I was sinking and I didn't know what to do. And, you know, and so I started taking the pills, and it takes 21 days for the medication to get in your system and start to go to work.
Feels bad at first, doesn't it?
You feel like, well, what's taking so long, right? What's going to happen? What's going to happen to me, right? But if it, eventually it was like a cloud came off of me, and I was able to see things so clear, right? And I remember a couple months after I was on the medication, we used to have employee evaluations, and I had one at the radio station, and they said, we're thinking about having you take a DNA test because you're not the same person anymore, right? You've completely changed, right?
Yeah.
And it was then, once I got on medication, that I started making like a lot of money, like a ridiculous amount of money, right? And it was because I was able to get out of my own way, right? And I stayed in therapy for a long time and realized a lot of things about myself. And sometimes I tell people that, you know, as human beings, we're allowed to be angry. You're allowed to be pissed. You're allowed to all that stuff. But you got to ask yourself, is it worth it? And most of the time, the answer is no.
Yeah.
Right?
Almost every time.
So, and that's kind of like what I live by, because I was known before medication of having one of the worst tempers in the history of mankind, right? And my wife asked me one time, she goes, how did you become that way? And I said, well, I don't know. I said, when I remember growing up, people would say, life sucks. Life is hard. So I thought everybody felt the way I felt because everybody said it, right?
Right.
But it doesn't work that way. Life is just saying it. Life is wonderful. Life is great. But I found out there's a chemical in your brain called serotonin that regulates your mood, and my brain wasn't making it. So the antidepressants help my brain make it, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a side effect. 4% of people, one of the side effects is loss of libido. And, of course, yes,
you got
I'm in
it.
The 4%, right? So, you know, I remember the doctor says, we can give you a second medication called Wellbutrin, and this will help with that, right? And I was like, I don't know, man. And my wife was like, she says, look, it's up to you. She goes, what's important is you get better. She goes, I don't care about no libido stuff. She goes, you know, I'm here for the long haul, right? And she has been with me, you know, like for forever.
You had a good one.
Yeah, a real good one. And she's always looking out for me. And it's, you know, and I'm thankful for it. And people, I get embarrassed sometimes because, like with the St. Louis Weight Loss Secret endorsement that I'm doing, and they give you an app and you put your information in there and then they check it. And then when they have your weekly call, they say, oh, I see you've lost like 6 pounds. That's wonderful, right? And so for whatever reason, it didn't get done because she does it. I don't put it in there. She does it. So they said, do you have, I see you didn't put anything in the app. I said, yeah, my wife does that. She didn't, you know, I was like, you know, and it was like, you know, and it's funny because one time I had like these hernias, right? I had a couple of hernias and my wife was taking out the trash and I was getting in the car. This guy like looked at me. I said, I got hernias. I can't lift anything.
He said, and he's got a low libido.
I got low libido.
We went pretty long there with the legend, which I will never apologize. He's such a great guy. He's so open and honest and helps so many people. Really love Tones. You guys have seen the old school Hot Wheels I grew up with, right? With the tracks, with the loop-de-loop and all that kind of thing. They now have a life-size version.
Whoa.
Where you can get in a life-size Hot Wheel and do a life-size loop-de-loop.
Where is this at? Do you know?
I don't know. You can look it up and you can watch them do it and you can see in the whole thing. Can you even imagine if you could bring someone back from like 1789 when they're using candles and...
I always think, what would Laura Ingalls Wilder think of our technology today, you know? It's just a different world we live in.
And I guess, you know, like the Industrial Revolution, like they would have been pretty impressed by that. But I just love that for hundreds of years, very little changed.
And then it's just like exploding.
Then you got trains, and then you got planes, and now you got life-size Hot Wheels, and you got helicopters on Mars and new Earth.
Try to explain the concept of AI and, talking to this, it's called a microphone, talking to this for 15 seconds.
Describe anything your imagination can come up with, and it will show you.
Exactly.